Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, editor-at-large of Recode. You may know me as someone who tried Tinder once and is never going back, but in my spare time, I talk tech, and you're listening to Recode Decode from the Vox Media Podcast Network. Today in the red chair is Nancy Jo Sales, a journalist and best-selling author who has written for Vanity Fair, The Guardian, and New York Magazine, among other places. She's also the director of a new HBO documentary called Swiped, Hooking Up in the Digital Age. Nancy Jo, welcome to Recode Decode.
Thank you so much.
So I want to go, I like to go into the backgrounds of the people I talk to so they understand how they got where they got. And I want to do that. But this is based off a story you wrote in Vanity Fair. Is that correct? This was a very controversial story, too, at the time.
Based on wouldn't exactly be correct, but mm-hmm. It covers the same subject matter.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really interesting because what you did, I think, and quite correctly, and even though there were a lot of complaints about it, but I didn't think it was. I thought it was absolutely dead on in terms of what these gamification of dating was doing to culture and girls especially, and boys too, and how they behaved. And just before we started here, I said it actually had a really big impact on me. I was reading it one night at my house, and I was so angry, you know, and it was so clear the coarsening of relationships through this app and how people behaved on it, and all these apps, these different dating apps. And so I got up from my bed, I was reading it, I was so mad. I was like, you had some girl did something, and I got so angry that you wrote it beautifully.
Thank you.
That I went down, and my son was sleeping, and I woke him up, and I said, if you ever treat a girl like this, I will break your arm, or something like, I was like, I didn't not break his arm, but I was like, if you ever, I am so mad at you right now. And he was like, Mom, what did I do? I'm like 12. And I was like, listen, I just want to make sure, like, you need to read this. And I made him read it. I was like, don't ever speak to women online like this. It was a ridiculous parenting moment on my part. But in any case, it had a great impact on me.
I don't think it's ridiculous. I mean, maybe it was a little abrupt, but
yeah,
I think it's necessary that as parents, we do start talking to our kids, girls and boys,
yeah,
about
watch the documentary too.
About the new ways that people
communicate with each other.
And
yeah,
you know, I wrote a book about that, American Girls,
yes,
Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers, that goes into that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to a lot of schools, and parents often say, well, what do I do? And you know, it seems pretty obvious to me, as it did to you, that
mm-hmm.
we need to start having conversations like this about what this new technology
and how you interact and stuff. So let's get started. Talk about how you got to here, because you have written a lot about this topic and you were very early to writing onto it. And obviously everyone knows about Tinder and knows about dating and the changing nature of dating and the gamification. But let's talk about how you got into it, because you were a longtime journalist. You covered various and different sundry things.
I started writing about teenagers in the 90s at New York Magazine. I randomly got assigned a piece about teenage culture, and there was not things went viral back then, but it was sort of the same kind of thing. It went viral in the sense that everybody was talking about it, and then it went from there to a series of articles, and then it became sort of my unofficial beat, so I've been covering—
What was your first story? What was the first one you did?
It was called Prep School Gangsters,
and
it's about how the hip-hop generation was influenced. I love hip-hop music, and I also covered hip-hop artists and nightlife and so forth for Vibe magazine. This was more about boys and how some boys, especially white boys in New York City, it was for New York Magazine, were adopting this kind of gangster, you know, mode. And it was— they were actually, you know, aspirational to be gangsters, to actually be gangsters. And some of them were dealing drugs and, you know, getting into all kinds of situations. Yeah. But it was more about the culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hip hop was, this has been written about a lot by others, not by me, but the music industry pushed gangster rap. Mm-hmm. And it, not that it's not great, I love a lot of those artists very much, but it was taken up in this sort of way that I think a lot of people could say bordered on a kind of racial, you know, offensiveness or racism. Mm-hmm. And yet, it was nuanced in the sense that I also saw all of these, like, really interesting connections and relationships being formed.
Absolutely.
And it was sort of shocking, I think, to a lot of people who read it, what was going on.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't really think about it back then, but I was covering kids and technology back then.
Right.
Because they were running around with cameras, these handheld video cameras. They were filming themselves fighting and having sex. And it was the era of, like, you know, sex tapes, you know, Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee. And so it was this new kind of way that and they were all suddenly watching porn, which they had not had the same availability to before.
Right.
Boys were watching a lot of porn. So it was dial-up, you know.
Right.
I would sit in these, you know, rooms with them, and they would, like, wait, you know, a long time with that ding,
ding,
going for, like, these images to appear.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know it at the time, but I was already sort of noticing because how technology was changing culture for kids because they were adopting, as kids do, technology earlier than everyone else and using it in ways that became the way others used it.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely.
So that was a thing, and I covered kids then and throughout my time at Vanity Fair. Also, I was often put on stories when I did celebrity culture that were about young-ish celebrities, Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton.
Right.
And then I did The Bling Ring, which was the story of the teenagers in Los Angeles who robbed celebrities' homes, and they used technology to find out when the people were at home
were
or not at home. And then they also
advertised
their things that they had stolen. They advertised it on Facebook. That's actually kind of how they were caught. Mm-hmm. So if you watch Sofia Coppola's film that she based on my article for Vanity Fair, it was called The Suspects Wore Louboutins, she incorporated a lot of these tech images. I think that film is very underrated,
by the
way. I agree
with you.
It's a really great film.
It is.
I don't know why, I don't know why people didn't see that at the time. I think it's going to come back around. People have been writing about it recently, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she and I, when I was consulting with her on the film, I told her, like, they're just on screens all the time now. Mm-hmm. This is 2013. Mm-hmm. So it was, this was sort of coming up and coming along that this was happening. And she incorporated this aspect of it very well, I thought, because this is kind of like way that the brain is sort of like, you know, flitting around to all these different images.
I call it continuous partial attention.
Yeah, exactly. She has that in the film, I think, and graphically it's done very well. So, and then I did a piece. So this is getting back to how did I write about technology. So
I did the dating piece, the Tinder piece.
No, actually the really first thing that I did that I really dived into tech and kids was, it was called Friends Without Benefits. Mm-hmm. And the first, it was viral, 2013. It was about how girls use social media, how teenage girls age 13 to 19 use social media. And I was really, I think it's safe to say I was the first person to really write about, in any kind of deep way, about likes and how likes had affected these girls' self-esteem.
Right.
They're feeling like they had to be validated by others' approval and how it was messing with their heads, the continuous posting.
What attracted you to that? The idea is because you could see the warping of these teen minds, or?
Okay, so 2012, we saw a lot of really tragic stories all of a sudden about cyberbullying that led to suicide. There was Amanda Todd, which was a tragic suicide that really devastated me. Mm-hmm. You know, she committed suicide after having a non-consensual nude shared online by an older man that she met on some site. And so these were, like, things that we had never seen before. Like, it's unusual to see something that you're actually like, that has never happened before.
Right.
And so I talked to Graydon Carter, who's the executive editor at Vanity Fair, my boss for decades, and he I said, I really want to know what's going on with all this, and why are girls seem to be the victims right. of these events and these, mm-hmm. like, you know, there was Steubenville where these girls,
right.
you know, the video of the girl being assaulted was put online. And it wasn't only teenagers that were, you know, commenting in this very ugly way about it. They're adults as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a good call as an editor. He said, let's find, because I wanted to focus on like one case. Mm-hmm. He said, let's find out what the broader thing is that's going on, like quote unquote average girls.
Right.
You know, whatever that means. Regular people.
Rather than the tragedy case.
The
ones who don't.
Who
are suffering from it but don't kill themselves or other things.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I went to a couple of cities and interviewed some girls about their social media use, and people really had not been thinking about it, talking about it, writing about it. The opening scene of that story, Friends Without Benefits, is about Tinder. Mm-hmm. It's about a girl who, this is 2013, I had never heard of Tinder. Of course, I knew about Grindr, but she's the one who told me about Tinder. And she said that she had her heart broken by a guy, and she's just going to go on Tinder and like have sex with somebody, lose her virginity to like get over it, mm-hmm. get over her feelings. And I said, what's Tinder?
Yeah. What?
And she took it out of her purse. Yeah. She took her phone out of her purse and started showing me what it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my goodness. You know, so this is very different. At that time, Tinder allowed 13 to 17-year-olds to be on the app.
Did.
And now they don't.
Right.
So that piece led to American Girls.
Allegedly.
Well, they still make fake Facebook profiles and still get on it. And, you know, there were a lot of young girls, you know, girls really young, mm-hmm. like 13, who were telling me they were on it and talking to older guys. And older to them, to me, is even 16 or 17. But I mean older, like 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed very dangerous
wrong.
To me, not only in the kind of sexual assault type situations that could occur, but even just emotionally, just...
And the gamification of it, too, that it was
a game.
It was a game versus real relationships.
So going fast to... While I was reporting my book, I did a piece for Vanity Fair, Tinder and the Dawn of the Dating Apocalypse. And it came out of another conversation with Grayton. He said, I was telling him about my... What are you up to? I'm telling him about my book. And he said, oh, yeah, you should do a piece just on those dating apps. And I said, you know, I was actually very hesitant at that time because I thought, well, everybody kind of knows about them already. I kind of wrote about them in that last piece. Everybody's on them. And he said, you know, it's just... But nobody's really writing about the culture of it. People... Mm-hmm. There were... A lot of sort of cheerleading type of stories that you see in the New York Times sometimes or in other places.
This is cool.
Yeah, like, hey, the kids are doing something new and isn't it great? You know, and like I find like a lot of times the writers.
You wrote like so many articles I've read.
Right. That is tech reporting.
Yeah, it can be.
And I think, well, a lot of it. You know, I know that there are good, really good people who cover the world of tech, Sarah Lacey, Nick Bilton, have a more critical eye and a more, like, intelligent and analytical way of looking at it. But a lot of this stuff...
No, it is. It's great.
...gets written about.
Look at this. Isn't it cool?
Isn't it cool? And the kids are doing it. And Mark Zuckerberg's such a boy genius. And wow. You know, and so that was how the tone of what a lot of it was. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this piece that was really about... misogyny, mm-hmm. sexism, sexual harassment, because this is what I heard from young women and men who were
and more
using.
Than that, the willingness to put up with it, becoming anesthetized to people speaking to you in ways you should never be spoken to or accepting of that. That was what struck me about that article, was that they had become used to it. And that, to me, was the saddest part of it.
Became used to it so quickly. I mean, we're talking—
And the technology's made so you do become used to it.
Yeah.
You allow yourself to become a piece of meat. You really do, or an object or a thing.
It had happened so fast. You know, at one point, Nick Bilton said to me when I was interviewing him, actually, for this movie that I've just done, Swiped, he said, you know, technology makes everything go faster. Cars go faster. You know, airplanes make us go even faster. But when you go faster, you have more accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the accident that has happened here is this. I'm not sure that the creators of these platforms really even thought about
this. Well, that's my whole issue with them right now. I'm having a large and long debate with Silicon Valley about what they should have known and what they didn't know. But let's stick to
this. They didn't really think about how it was going to exacerbate
they never thought about
misogyny.
It. Absolutely. So you did those articles, and then talk about how you got to that. I want to get to the film in the next section, but you were just interested in how these technologies are being used to change relationships, correct? Like the idea.
Especially in terms, I mean, my subject, my focus is a lot young women and and girls, but in the film we have people from the LGBT community, a trans
where it began, which a lot of these dating apps started.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, way before Grindr, actually.
And we talk about how they were and still are useful to people in the LGBT community who come from places where it's often not even safe to openly be yourself. And so they can be very useful and they can be a way to meet someone. And we talk about that. I mean, it's not, you know, nothing is ever like 100% one way or the other. And I know that they're used in all kinds of different ways. And yet, the other thing that I've noticed is even where people do have positive experiences and even where they do appreciate the utility and so forth. And of course, we know that they're, I mean, we all know that person who's gotten married off of Tinder, you know, like that happens. And the New York Times, again, sorry, I'm not trying to Times bash, but it is true that they love to put in their vows section these things about they met on Tinder. In fact, when I was, I don't know why, you know, I mean, it does happen. Okay. But when I was at Tinder and I interviewed, I can't wait for you to see the film because when I interviewed them about it and that's what they say.
Yeah.
And we ran a clip of that interview that you did with Sean Rad because that's what he says.
Right.
And
that's
you,
his thing.
Because you actually said to him, your question is not in the film, but his response is, and what you actually said to him was, but isn't it just a hookup app?
Yeah.
You know, because they're known colloquially as that.
Right, yeah.
And he says, oh, well, you know, we've gotten people married off Tinder and we're just inundated with emails about people who have relationships and, you know, like just all this
bliss. I think my next answer was like, oh, come on. You know what I mean? Like
wedded bliss. Okay, so then when I was, so we ran that. And then when I'm at Tinder, they wouldn't let me talk to Sean. He agreed for me to come, my film crew and everything. You can ask me about that if
you
want.
I will in a second.
Because it was like, we had this big fight and then he was cool with it. And we thank him in the credits for that. But he let us come up there. So, but they wouldn't let me talk to him. He said he was busy. So I'm talking to Jessica Carbino. She is the sociologist at Tinder. That was her title at the time. And I say, okay, so where's the data? Like you're a company that, you know, traffics in data. Like where's the data on all this? And she says, well, we don't, that data's not available, but we are inundated with emails on a daily basis. So she uses exactly the same phrase, which meant to me, suggested to me that it was a talking point.
Yeah.
Because I do think that there are people who say that, you know, well, anecdotally, you know, I think they want to believe in the fantasy of it.
They do. They do. They want to believe it's not just a hookup.
They want to believe in the fantasy of it. They want to think that, like, that romance that I, you know, yearn for, which we all yearn for someone to love because it's part of being a human being, is on this little app and it's going to be so easy. I'm going to swipe and it's going to be there. But statistically, we don't have any data. There's data on how many people want that, which is most people, 81%, says Hinge's surveys. They want a long-term relationship eventually. Not that it's bad if you don't, but that is what most people do want. And yet there's no data on who finds that.
Well, we're here with Nancy Jo Sales. We're talking about her new documentary on HBO called Swipe, Hooking Up in a Digital Age. When we get back, we're going to talk more about the documentary and what she found when she was writing it. She's had a long history of writing about these issues.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
We're back with Nancy Jo Sales. She's a journalist and author and now the director of an HBO documentary called Swipe, Hooking Up in the Digital Age. So you started to make this documentary, and you were, it wasn't just Twitter, although swiping is a Tinder kind of thing. And so talk first about going to Tinder. How did you want to frame this? Just like stating this is how people hook up, or what was your point?
I wanted to investigate the culture of dating apps, and I did not have any kind of agenda in my mind about, is this good, is it bad? And there's, in certain ways, I would be hesitant to really pass judgment on anybody forever using these things or doing whatever they want to do on them. I was really more interested in hearing from characters who do use them, humanizing the people in those many stacks of pictures and finding out about what their experience has really been, how it feels to be on these apps, what they see when they're on them, how it makes them feel, what they've experienced. So right. I want to hear from people, you know,
and the people who make them.
Actual users. And then also talk to the people who make them.
Right.
The people at Tinder and Bumble, and we also talked to Hinge. And then we finally talked to Mandy Ginsberg at Match Group, who's the new CEO of the company that owns Tinder, OkCupid, and many of these apps. And I wanted to really find out, like, why did you make these things? How do you think it's affecting culture? Does it bother you that there are people who have these, you know, very troubling experiences and outcomes, including sexual assault? And that's what I took to them.
Let's go back a little bit of the history of dating apps. I mean, there was a move to technologize dating a long time ago, you know, lots of ways to do it. But and then they're moved into another period, which I covered, which was a whole bunch of apps where it was like a clearinghouse. It was classifieds, essentially, right, where they were, here's some people you might like, here's people who might match you. And that was sort of the period of, what's the company that was a big pioneer in that? It wasn't OkCupid was one of them, but there was a bunch of them. Things changed really dramatically, though, with the advent of the mobile phone.
Sure. We talked about that in the film.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll never forget, years ago, there was I've seen all the startups that come through, and there was it did start off a lot among gay men trying to hook up, and there was I think it was called M2MforSex.com, which I was like, oh, all right, that pretty much says it all.
Yeah.
And I remember calling Jerry Yang of Yahoo, just talking to him, and he's like, what's interesting? I go, you got to buy this company. And he's like, I'm not buying M2MforSex.com. I go, no, the concept of it is brilliant. Like, I want to have sex in the Castro at 4 o'clock and I like to be peed on, whatever. It was like, and then it went, and then found people.
Yeah.
And I go, matching is brilliant. Like, it's astonishing that you can literally make a list. And I said, it's horrifying and fascinating, and you should understand how important this is. Like, and as it got smarter and smarter, and he, of course, didn't buy the company, but I was really intrigued, not so much by the dating aspect of it, is what it takes relationships down to ones and zeros in a way that had never happened, and with speed, like that you can find someone locationally near where you are.
I think there's also a stereotype, homophobic stereotype of gay men that they just want to hook up.
Yeah.
And I found that when I talked to the gay men that I talked to for the film, what they wanted to talk about was not how much they loved all of this, but how it was making it harder to actually connect and have relationships
Every
with
gay
people.
Man talks to me about
right?
That.
Because, there's a great quote, one of the, and we talk about how it changed gay culture too, because there's a great quote, a young man named Austin who's in the film. He said, I know all these quotes by heart almost, because I've, you know, you sit with a film for a year editing it, it's like you know everything by heart. He says, it started to change the gay clubs. And it was like, instead of talking to each other and you know, being there together, everyone was on their phones.
Yes.
And everyone was looking on their phones. And he said, it occurred to him, like, why are we doing this? Because, and I love what he says, we're all already here at the dance.
Right.
And we went into some gay clubs in New York and filmed, and everybody was on their phones. Not every single person.
Yes, but they're looking on Grindr.
We have a young gay man.
What's
in
the
film,
other Scruff?
Scruff. Or, he says, you know, if I see somebody in a bar or whatever who I'm attracted to, I won't go over and talk to him. I will just go on Scruff and see if he's on Scruff. And,
right.
like, maybe we'll match on Scruff, like, in the same room. And this also was what we heard when we went to the University of California at Santa Cruz campus, where we filmed a lot of beautiful footage of that place. My goodness, what a beautiful,
beautiful place.
And all these really wonderful, wonderful young people we interviewed. One of them is trans. And they were saying that, oh, yeah, college campus, like, nobody, like, you know, talks and hooks up. It's just like we just go on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, people have asked me, if, as they've been interviewing me for this film, what did you learn? What surprised you? And that is something that really surprised me, that in college,
right, they
when they're all there,
right,
I'm like,
that's
what, that's like your time to, you know, like talk to people and have flings and romances and relationships and all your practice relationships for like your future relationships. No. It's all Tinder, and mostly Tinder, actually. Other apps, too, as well. But the on Santa Cruz campus, it was Tinder. And they would even say, like, if you're going to a party, you try and match with somebody before you go to the party and meet the person that you match with at the party. So it's already all arranged already.
Right.
You know, so this whole weird way that, you know, like you said, gamification is one issue, which we go into in the film with Adam Alter, who's the great sociologist at NYU, wrote Irresistible. But we, and, you know, we related to B.F. Skinner experiment. It's just like
talk
blew
about
my
the
mind.
Gamification of it. What's happening when people are playing these things? Because when I see young people use them, often they're doing it, I'm like, and they're like, no, no. I'm like, that's a person that you're just, it's not like a product.
Like I said,
it's not something you're
I gonna, can't wait for you to see this. Yeah. I would love to know what you think, because one of the most striking moments to me in interviewing Jonathan Medin, the CSO of Tinder, who invented the swipe, was when I said, how did you invent this? And he had talked a lot in interviews about, you know, he's looking at himself in the mirror and he's swiping on the fog on the mirror and like that, or like it's looking at a deck of cards. What he hadn't said before this film that I know of is talking about gamification and how he actually, in part, based this all on psychological studies and experiments involving addiction and gamification that he learned about in psych, I'm quoting him, psych courses in business school.
Right.
And so, or whatever major he was in, I'm not sure. So he's talked, he mentions this phrase, and I don't want to get it wrong, but it's, I believe it's variable ratio schedule, variable reward schedule. Now this is all.
Feels very mouse-like, but go ahead.
It's pigeons.
Oh, pigeons. All right.
Okay. It's pigeons. It's all related to an experiment done by B.F. Skinner, the very controversial and some say very insidious sociologist whose whole, you know, work was a lot about controlling behavior. How, oh, look what we can do. Look what we can make people do or make pigeons do. He did this experiment, and then I went and had my archival researcher go and find the footage of the experiment. It's in the film where Skinner, this kind of, you know, some people would say like evil genius, is surrounded by cages with pigeons. And this is what Tinder is. It's like the pigeon becomes a gambler because when he pecks and gets food, he gets bored. So he pecks. He doesn't want to get the food. He might get it, he might not. That's the whole swiping mechanism. You swipe, you might get a match, you might not. And then you're just like excited to play the game.
Right.
And you just keep playing the game because it's like, am I going to match or am I not match? And people will match like, you know, we talk to people who would just match. And it was really just about the swiping and the matching more. It became more about that.
Because it makes you feel better.
Right. And you get that little dopamine rush.
Right.
And so Skinner essentially turned pigeons into gamblers.
And so when you think about the game, because there's two things you're talking about there. One is gamification of it, which means it's somewhat fun to start to treat people like not real people, just pictures on a screen. And the second part is addiction. That it's addictive.
We have a character in the film.
Which great games, successful games, not great games, usually are.
We have a character in the film named Kyle. He's a young man in New York City. And he's like a, you know, just like a regular heterosexual white dude. Like kind of the guy that these apps are sort of made for would be sort of my thesis.
Yes, they are. They are all made. Everything the internet's made for is a white man who lives in San Francisco.
Well, okay, I'm glad you said it. Well, anyway, so
you know
well,
my a joke that I always tell.
No,
San Francisco is assisted living for millennials.
Okay. Well,
think
you know,
about it.
I mean, a lot.
Everything they want.
I've been so heartened in a way because I have seen a lot of tweets and posts since the film came out on Monday. It's on HBO now. You can see it on all the HBO platforms now. It's called Swiped. I've seen a lot of tweets and so forth from young women and men who have said, wow, I didn't realize that this stuff was made by, like,
white tech bros. Like, what? I wasn't thinking about
it.
They don't think about
it.
They're not you and I was totally immersed in this culture.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're not me on the sidelines, a reporter reporting on this culture.
Mm-hmm.
They're just using it. They're not thinking about who's making it. They're not thinking that, like, a bunch of white dudes in a dorm room, most, you know, we're just sitting around saying, how can we get all the guys like us laid?
Right.
I understand that that's a reductive way of saying it.
No,
but
it's not. You're 100. Yeah, they were thinking about the women and how good they could feel about themselves the whole time.
Okay.
They're never thinking about
that. She has this sarcastic face emoji.
I was talking to someone from Twitter who worked there, got attacked recently online, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, and was like, oh, this was really hard. I'm like, welcome to the experience of the rest of the world. Like, and the reason Twitter allows bullying is because the people who made it didn't get bullied on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's objectification.
Slow. And they would argue with me, and I just know it.
Well, the bullying is something that I covered a lot in my American Girls book, and it does sort of come into people's experience on these apps too, because you could say that sexual harassment is a kind of bullying, often, you know, spills into what
it
is bullying.
Yeah.
One of the most powerful things I think in the film is the story that is told by a young woman named Nicole,
mm-hmm.
who went on a few dates with a guy she met on, she met him on a dating app.
Right.
And he did not take kindly to the fact that she would not have sex with him. He
mm-hmm.
felt that he was entitled to sex. There's actually a recent case of a rape in England where the guy said as he was arrested or in trial or something, but I met her on a dating app. I mean, we were supposed to have sex.
Right.
A lot of people feel, I think young men in particular sometimes feel, that's what it's for, you know.
Right.
So he got mad at her. And he constructed a website about her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not know how common this was. I talked to Danielle Citron, who's she's a hate crimes in cyberspace. She's the author of that, and she's a law professor. And she's like, oh, yeah, this is not uncommon.
Not at all.
He made this website about her all about how she was a crackhead.
Yeah.
And it was just completely not true.
Right.
And when she went to the app on which that had happened, they said, oh, sorry, not our problem. Call the police.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the police are not equipped to deal with something like this.
Right.
And she went to other people who might be able to help her,
mm-hmm.
like Facebook and Instagram, because this guy had scanned all of her photos, you know, scanned for every single bad photo of her that
mm-hmm.
ever existed, 17 years old, drinking and at a party and looking awful and all that kind of stuff. And that's her words, looking awful, and put it on this big mosaic. So it's like terrible, ugly pictures of her words.
Right.
And then she's a crackhead.
Right.
Just because she wouldn't sleep with
him. Yeah.
And so I think that the risks involved, we do go into the risks involved, which are enormous
mm-hmm.
and include, we talked to a young woman who met someone on another app who was sexually assaulted. He did not rape her, but he attempted to.
Right.
And so these horrible things are happening, and yet no one is talking about it. We're in the Me Too moment. People are talking about sexual harassment and assault
mm-hmm.
In the workplace and all these, even online, and yet not on dating apps. And that perplexes me, because I would guess that the place where most young women, if not young people, are experiencing this kind of sexual harassment
right.
is on dating
Absolutely.
Apps on a daily basis.
In the next thing, I'm going to talk about sort of the responsibility of the tech companies to that. Like, what is their actual responsibility, which they seem to abrogate almost continually on anything, whether it's the Russians or dating apps or anything else.
I asked Mandy Ginsberg about that.
Yeah.
She is the, CEO of Match mm-hmm. Group again. She's newly hired, first female CEO of Match Group. And she said, we're going to do everything we can to make all of these products, she actually said, we're in the Me Too moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're
going
to do everything we can to make these products safe and great for women. And I say, okay, this is all on camera. I say, okay, well, how are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she says, I swear to God, you got to watch it.
Yeah.
She says, well, we have tips. Don't ever drink. Don't get in someone's car.
What?
Don't go to someone's house. Young women have to be really careful. I mean, a lot of young women actually have posted about this and said, this is one of our problems, is that we put all the onus and the responsibility on young women, quote unquote,
right.
not to get raped.
Right.
Whereas, you have all these platforms where you're putting together strangers
mm-hmm.
without any kind of vetting, without any kind of really knowing who this person is.
Yep.
Anybody can say anything from behind a screen. And when one of these things happens,
You can't get sued.
I think, it's oddly enough, one thing I'm writing about next week is the immunity from Section 230
that these
companies
That's
have.
That's the problem.
I'm going to advocate. You can't get sued. I want them all to get sued.
All right.
Because then they'll stop.
Exactly. That is the Rosetta Stone of the whole thing. They have no responsibility, and they don't give an F because it will never affect their bottom line if Nicole is bullied on a website or Dylan, our character in the film, has a guy come over and tries to rape her. There's no accountability whatsoever, and there doesn't have to be. And it's all Section 230.
Absolutely.
It's the whole
Section
thing.
Section 230. It's absolutely. We're talking to Nancy Jo Sales. She has a new documentary out. She's written a ton of amazing articles, but she is a director of a new HBO documentary called Swiped, Hooking Up in a Digital Age. When we get back, we're going to talk about tech responsibility going forward for these things.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
We're here with Nancy Jo Sales. She's a journalist and author and now the director of an HBO documentary called Swipe, Hooking Up in a Digital Age. You know, you were talking about sort of they like to say the positive things about the uses of these. And some people like them. They like to meet people this way because it is hard to meet people.
We don't dismiss that. In the mm-hmm. film, we do have a character named Claudia in the Santa Cruz section. And she says, hey, look, you know, I like casual sex. I want to have casual sex. I have casual sex on these apps, and that's just fine with me. Mm-hmm. And that's fine with me, too. And that's fine. That should be fine with everybody. You should be able to choose whatever you want to mm-hmm. choose. But the problem is that, as we've already discussed, most people want a real connection, a real kind of lasting or at least short-term, long-term, whatever, but something realer. That's borne out by studies. Most people do want that, men and women. Mm-hmm. And the marketing of these companies is that they're going to get that on these apps. And yet, there is no proof or study or anything or data that that is what you get statistically.
Right. Yeah.
And even Justin McLeod, who is the CEO of Hinge, who we interview in the film, he openly says these swiping apps, these swiping platforms, privilege people who want hookups.
Right, absolutely. So they're designed that way. What do you think, is there any that's sort of tried to be different from your perspective that you think is decent?
I'm always really hesitant to say what's...
Because Bumble tried, who was one of the... But that was their premise, but didn't. And then is there any of these that...
I'd be really interested for you to see the interviews yeah. that we have with Whitney Wolf heard right. in the
She was one
film.
Of the original Tinder people and then went off, had a...
Well, now, yeah, she's in the film and she's being sued now by Tinder mm-hmm. for allegedly stealing the swiping mechanism. I mean, Bumble is very similar to Tinder. And the only real difference is that women have to message first. And her marketing, which has been very successful, is that this makes it feminist mm-hmm. because you have to message first. And this makes it so that, you know, you can't get harassing messages. But that's not true. Mm-hmm. I've talked to women who've been harassed on Bumble. Mm-hmm. As soon as you contact them, they can then harass you.
Right.
You're just messaging them first. I mean, they don't, like...
So is there anyone that doesn't? I'm just, like, that's the marketing for that, is that you have control of it, but you don't. Once you've started your first
I think that a lot of marketing is done with this dating industry mm-hmm. that kind of it kind of adopts a feminist discourse and kind mm-hmm. of makes it seem like you're going to be all liberated and empowered if you do this.
Right.
Because, you know, that sells it better. You know, it's like a lot of companies do that with women mm-hmm. when they want to sell them something that isn't necessarily in their best interest or mm-hmm. even good for them. But they'll say, hey, but if you do this, you're going to be a feminist.
Because you can have control of yourself.
Right. And I mean, actually, we have this dating historian in the film. She's really great. Her name is Zoe Strimple, and she has this great British accent. And she says, but Bumble, her critique of it is that just
means women have to do more work, and they always have to do more work. And all, you know, like,
what about the specific ones, like Jade 8 or the others? Because the best ad I ever saw, it was, I was driving down Hollywood, Sunset Boulevard, and there was an ad for, I think it was Jade 8, and it said, why is this app different than others? It was, you know, why is this night different than others? It was a very funny thing.
That's cute. A lot of them have good marketing.
Yeah, they really do. Is there any of the specific ones, like Christian Mingle or Jade 8 or...
There's an app now for everything.
Yeah, there is.
For everyone.
Do those
there's farmers,
change it?
There's Farmers Meat. Farmers Meat. Something.
Yeah.
I went on it because I wanted to know what it was like. What are they doing on here? Mm-hmm. And I was on my book tour and I was in the Midwest somewhere.
Did you meet a farmer?
I didn't. But I could have. There was a lot of discussion of, like, livestock and barns and stuff.
Yeah.
And so...
I like that. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Okay. A guy in a flannel shirt. That's cool. There's nothing wrong with being a farmer. I just, you know, we need farmers. Farmers, I like farmers. Mm-hmm. What I was trying to say is that they can get very specific and very... They can go into very specific things. They're trying to make money. So they're like looking at every demographic.
Yeah. Are those better or not? Or is there anything, is there any way this could be done using technology in
to
a
meet
good way?
People?
Yeah. In a good way.
You know,
or does it just remove all the emotion from it so it makes it impossible and it becomes utterly transactional? I wonder, I don't know the answer to this because some days, like I was having a discussion with Kevin Systrom from Instagram. I think about Instagram and those other ones a lot because I find them performative and I find them, nobody feels good.
No. There's a lot of,
everyone,
you know, when my book American Girls first came out, you know, like you said, it was one of the first to sort of, you know, to talk about this stuff. Some people resisted and said, oh no, that's not true. And now there've been in the last few years, there've been like a million studies. Mm-hmm. Like this stuff makes people, especially young people, feel bad.
Yeah.
Makes them anxious, makes them depressed. It can lead to all kinds of things like cutting. You know, the sexualization can lead to all sorts of, you know, body image issues and everything. And when I've gone to schools, every single school that I have been to, talk to teachers. If you want to know what this stuff is really doing to kids, mm-hmm. talk to teachers because they have to deal with it every single day in the classroom. And most schools do not ban phones because their parents want them to have their phones so that they can be in contact with them. And the teachers say, I heard this again and again and again. This is ruining our school. Mm-hmm. And so I think because they're just too addicted. They're mm-hmm. too distracted. They're not paying attention. They're not looking at the teacher. Right. They're trying to text or sext or watch porn or whatever it is.
Just read the news.
Or just talking about whatever, going on BuzzFeed, whatever, on their phones instead of paying attention to what's happening. They don't know how to be in the moment a lot of the time.
So think about a good way of using it. Is it just too addictive to...
I think what we have to face is that this is unprecedented. You know, we've never had a way of meeting each other this before.
I just had Jaron Lanier on the podcast. He had written a book about getting off of social media. He's a technologist. He loves technology. But I think one of the things he said that was most profound is we've never had an experiment with all the world talking to each other in a digital format and instantly. And he said, maybe we're not ready for... He thinks humanity's not ready, can't handle what's happening.
It's going too fast.
Yeah.
We're guinea pigs. We're, you know, we've become products. You know, that's,
right.
I think that's pretty clear. We are providing valuable data on a, you know, pretty consistent basis to people who are making money off of us. We're laborers, in a sense, to people who, you know, don't really care whether or not we fall in love and get married or whatever. They want our data. They want our money. Well, Tinder is now charging a lot for its services. You know, after they get you sort of addicted and hooked, a lot of these companies, then they start charging for certain features, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, no more swipes, but you can do this and you can do that. And, you know, so what I always try and do in this work is trying to get people to think about that, to think about the man behind the curtain and really like connect with your feelings and how you really feel. Mm-hmm. Not only when you're swiping, but when you're actually meeting up with these people and having sex with them and stuff. We have a sex therapist. She's a sex therapist. And she talks about connection and how good sex is really about connecting. And if you have technology to connecting with yourself, even.
Right.
Connecting with yourself and being in the moment with yourself. And if you have technology, which is so makes people so disassociative with not only others.
That's exactly the right word.
With their themselves, own selves. And it becomes this thing where like, this is what I'm supposed to do. I push this button, push that button, send these 6 messages. And that's one of the guys says in the beginning of the film, 6 messages is all it takes. Mm-hmm. And then I'm with this person and our clothes are off. You know, just connect mm-hmm. with yourself.
Right.
And think about, like,
so is there any good to it? Because I at this moment I don't have an answer to that. I don't, when I think of what's good in these kind of things, and this is not a dating app, but like whatever you think of Uber or Lyft, it's utility. When it becomes a utility, it is. But what's happened is dating has become a utility. Versus when it's I want to buy something, it arrives. That's better than going to Best Buy. It is. It just is. It's just a better experience. I'd rather not have done the Best Buy experience. Whatever it happens to me.
I think that's a really great argument for what's disturbing about this. Because mm-hmm. you just talked about buying stuff.
Right, I know. But that's what I'm saying. But dating doesn't fit into it. And that's
right.
the problem.
And
that's,
so there,
that's
and that,
the problem. And they put it into that paradigm.
Right. So
that's what I'm saying. When I like digital, yeah. it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it does make sense. And there's nothing wrong
with
it.
Well, no. Just because you look at something critically doesn't mm-hmm. mean you're a Luddite and want to just all go away. You want right. to go live with the Amish and, like, you know, I don't know.
The Amish have, like, cell phones now. So
I'm sure they have Tinder. No offense to Amish people, but you know what I mean. It's so pervasive and so addictive.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good analogy because, like, and that's the point at which we should start thinking about it. Like a guy in that article that you referenced, mm-hmm. Tinder and the yeah. Dawn of the Dating Apocalypse.
Still mad about that article.
I don't write the
headlines. I still want to, like, wake up my kids. Hey!
I don't write the headlines, but Dating Apocalypse, by the way, was a quote. It got taken up as, like, this weird thing. People were like, oh, she says there's not going to be more dating. I went on a date last night. But that's not, it was a quote from a young woman describing what a mess it all was. But there's a guy in that piece who says, it's like ordering Seamless,
right.
except you're ordering a person.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I've had other people who I don't think have read that article make similar analogies. Mm-hmm. So, but we're not Seamless. Mm-hmm. We're like human beings.
Right.
And it's really.
So what do we do? Let's finish up talking. What happens? Where's it headed?
Virtual reality sex.
That's right.
And sex robots.
Yep.
And we talk about that in the end of the film. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's
Minority
next.
Report, remember?
The first thing that's going to happen is live streaming on Tinder and other dating apps. That's happening mm-hmm. almost immediately. In other words, people will be able to, instead of just swiping on a picture, that's going to look really, really rudimentary very mm-hmm. quickly. People will be able to stream. They already stream. What most people Not most, but a lot of people do on dating apps is they match and then they go offline.
And meet.
Well, meet or just have a cyber relationship, maybe sometimes just cyber sex, go to FaceTime. Mm-hmm. So in other words, kind of take that FaceTime thing and maybe they start, you know, mutually, like, sexting
right,
through
yes,
FaceTime
yep.
after they're on the app and meet, what's your number? So that... I'm sure the dating apps know that. So mm-hmm. they're just going to incorporate that into the platform. So you
right.
can just start doing that right away. Mm-hmm. Are people going to talk about, like, Tolstoy and stuff? Maybe mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. people will. But I think a lot of times it's just going to turn into...
transactional.
And it's going to become naked stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's cool if that's what you want to do. But like I said, it's not...
What was that app that did that? That it had to go to business. It wasn't...
Chat roulette.
Chat roulette, yeah.
Yeah.
Which everyone was horrified, but now that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's happening, and I think it's going to be... Adam Alter says in the film, if you could just put on some goggles and put, you know, some of those things...
Haptic. It's called haptic.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Put on that thing that's going to, like, attach to your appendages or whatever.
Right.
Whatever you got down there. And you don't have to spend any money. You don't have to get dressed up. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take an Uber. You can just sit in your home and feel like you're not just having sex with someone, but that person can look like Scarlett Johansson or mm-hmm. Chris Hemsworth or whatever, you know?
Right.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says. Why wouldn't you do that every day?
Right.
Instead of, you know, people are difficult to like get to know,
yes,
and deal with and mm-hmm. and have relationships with. Relationships are hard. Marriage is hard. Mm-hmm. I did it twice unsuccessfully. even just the, like, highs and lows and fallout of a hookup mm-hmm. is so difficult to deal
it
with
is.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think that probably what's going to happen is technology, people who want to make money through the technology are going to step in and say, hey, guess what? You don't have to go through any of that. You can just put on your goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are people, of course, who will just be horrified by that and who will say, no, I don't want to do that. I want to go through all that hard work of knowing someone because that is valuable to me. I think there are lots and lots of people who will still want that and still do that. But I think there are a lot of people who will just—
Do you think that's good then? removing all that friction, so to speak?
I always try and not say good, bad.
All right.
Because I don't know. I know that it makes me sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of people who have watched, there's something about it that makes me sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of people who have watched the film have said, even though I've been lucky, you know, a lot of people really like the film and they're tweeting about it and got some good reviews and all that kind of stuff and coverage. But a lot of people have said that, that it makes them sad, that it seems sad, that this is where we are and this is where we're going.
Mm-hmm. So VR, haptic, what else?
Sex robots. In fact, there's already some sex robots out there. They're becoming more and more affordable, and there have been memes. Now, you have to understand also, like, the way that this subject matter affects me and my perspective on it is as a woman and as a woman who, you know, has written recently about young women and girls and who mm-hmm. has a daughter. Not that you have to have a daughter to
no.
understand.
Thank you for saying that.
Of course not.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course not.
Yeah.
You don't at all. But I do
no.
have one.
Mm-hmm.
And it does affect how I look at these things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. You know? So that's true, too. Both
mm-hmm.
things are true. You
right.
don't have to have one. But if
right.
you do have one, you know,
right. yep.
we can all
yep.
appreciate
yep.
that all of our experience
yes.
Is,
yes, 100%.
Is legit.
100%.
And we can all add to each other's understanding. So as someone who comes at it from a perspective that I would call, yes, feminist, it disturbs the heck out of me
mm-hmm.
because I see it as, it's not just that I think this, it's I see it.
Mm-hmm.
I see it. I interview young guys who, you know, and there's some young guys in the film who feel very emboldened to say and do degrading things because the technology seems to promote that.
It does.
And we don't want to, like, blame them, especially when they're really young and they're teenagers and stuff. They're just growing up in this culture.
Right.
Of course, they're personally responsible for anything that
yeah.
they do.
Yeah,
but,
it does. When
but
someone's
they're,
not there.
Their toxic masculinity is
no, I think it's
is
designed. It's designed to dehumanize. Even text. The things you say on text that you wouldn't say in person.
Well, so I've seen these memes lately.
Mm-hmm.
My editor, I was really lucky. My editor's only 25 years old, never
mm-hmm.
did a film before, and this
mm-hmm.
is his first film, and I wanted someone young.
Mm-hmm.
I really lobbied with HBO to get someone very young. He's really brilliant guy, I think, and you'll see in the film. He's a great editor, Spencer. And so, he's aware of all this stuff, and he's on these apps, and he, you know, was a social media kid. He grew up with social media and everything, and that's what I wanted him, his perspective in the film. So just a few days ago, actually, he sent me all these memes he was starting to see
mm-hmm.
on Instagram about robot sex.
Oh, really?
And they're very much like, you see her, like the robot, like bent over,
mm-hmm.
ready to
right.
do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the exact phrasing, but to paraphrase something along the lines of, why deal with a real girl when you have this?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So is it good, bad? I mean, huh.
That's bad. I'm going to make a value judgment there.
That I'm going to let Kara say it because
yeah,
she's allowed.
Bad. Yeah, you are too. You know that's bad. That's like, oh, no.
I know
on.
That it makes me upset.
Yeah.
And I don't want young women to have to see that and have to feel like, that's preferable to me, this real
right. so
person here with
so
a beating heart that you could
on
get to know.
Positivity, if we can do it.
Okay.
Is there any sign that it's not going this direction, that there people want to meet in person? Is there any quaint moment where people go, you know what, let's not do it this way, let's do it a different way?
I can tell you.
is it just the Amish? But go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you a story. And again, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do with this film or with any
mm-hmm.
of my reporting. I'm uncomfortable telling people what to do. I don't like anybody telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I report
mm-hmm.
and watch what I found out, you know.
Yeah.
And also, the film is beautiful. Can I just say that? I mean, beautiful.
Please.
Beautiful to look at. I have the best DP. His name is Daniel Carter. And he just made the world of dating. Even as disturbing and troubling as it is, it's a beautiful film. And just to look at, he's just a great cameraman. He did a great job. And we had this, I spoke with Daniel and also the colors for the film about how colorful I
mm-hmm.
wanted to make it. I wanted it to look like that, like an iPhone.
Right.
Because this is all like
yep.
taking place in a very colorful world.
Yes, those colors are for a reason.
Right.
Another addiction.
Right, addiction, like popping in.
I always go around and grayscale people's phones. And then they, because you don't like
it. You don't want to look at it anymore.
You don't want to look at it anymore.
That's so funny.
I'll grayscale yours later.
So this is a, I should. I'm way too addicted to it myself. So there's, it's just a beautiful film with a lot of colors, and it's just great to look at, I think.
So, the good story.
So going back to Tinder and the dawn of the dating apocalypse. So there's a guy in that story. It's all, you know, just, he's the Tinder man, the Tinder king or something.
Right.
There were like Reddit threads about him. Everybody's talking because he was effing a different girl on Tinder every night. Right. And, you know, so he kind of became my friend. He's a young guy. It's okay because we don't know his name and you don't know who he is. But he's a real person. And he became sort of my friend. And a lot of these guys become, you know, women too become my friends. Because I like them. They're interesting. So he reached out to me a few months after the piece came out. And he was having a lot of trouble emotionally. He had a lot of addictions, not just to Tinder, but drinking and drugs, cocaine. And he reached out to me and he said, I'm not really feeling okay. What do I do? So I hooked him up with a person that I know who's in that, you know, medical profession about getting some help. Cut to like a year later, he doesn't use, he went to different, you know, rehabs and so forth, and he's doesn't use any of that stuff anymore. It's all related, I think.
It is.
I think it's all related. It's all about addiction. This country has a real problem with addiction of all kinds. Food, alcohol, drugs, technology, dating apps. It's all addiction. So he's not on that, any of it anymore. And I said, so how do you date now? And he said, well, my therapist said I should really get a hobby, you know, to like take up my time when I'm not doing it, working or whatever. So he started, he took up swing dancing.
Oh, that's a good way to meet people.
Yeah. He became a swing dancer.
Yeah.
He's now, he's not Tinder man anymore. He's swing dancing man.
Okay, we're going to end up.
And he met a nice young person and they're together. So I'm not saying everybody's got to go swing dance.
Swing dancing is a great way to meet.
But whatever. I mean, he's dancing instead of swiping.
Nancy, I think we're going to end on that. That makes me happy. That's a really, that's fantastic. Tinder man, you're swing dance man.
I'm so glad he's you know, doing well.
Well, good. All right. The documentary on HBO, thank you, Richard Plepler, is called Swipe, Hooking Up in the Digital Age. It's now available on HBO. Is it going to have any other showing, a theatrical showing or anything?
HBO,
like that?
HBO Go, HBO Now, all the HBO platforms.
The HBO.
It was shot in it was shot for television.
All right,
so
what's next for you?
I'm trying to get somebody to give me a chance to do another documentary I have an idea for. That's really what I think I want to do
dating
now.
Dating still?
I love doing this so much. Not dating, something completely unrelated.
All right.
I really, I think,
it's a great way to express
yourself. I think I finally, and you know, I've done a lot of things. I think I finally found the thing I like doing the best.
Well, good. This is fantastic. I urge everyone to watch it. I'm going to watch it, not tonight, but because I'm going to go do something analog tonight. But when I get in front of the next screen, I do. Nancy Jo, it was great talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show. If you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find more episodes of Recode Decode on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you didn't like the interview, I don't care to know you. Or you just want to say hi, tweet at me. I'm at Kara Swisher on Twitter. Now that you're done with this, go check out the latest episode of Recode Media. You can find that show wherever you found this one. Thanks for listening to this episode of Recode Decode. And thanks to our editor, Joel Robbie, and our producer, Eric Johnson. I'll be back here on Saturday. Tune in then.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.